Hey, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our coffee. And today, we're excited because we have a guest with us. This is the first time we've ever met, and it's going to be a really fun conversation, learning about tools that help people teach. We're going to be talking about the music industry and how they're teaching and connecting students and teachers together. But I think that there's some base fundamentals in this conversation that any business can apply. That's our goal, to talk about business ideas, practices, and strategies. And we're going to be doing that today with Gordon Ramsey from Bold Music. So grab a cup of coffee and get ready for the conversation.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
All right, George, thanks for being here today. We're going to jump into rapid fire. Five randomly selected questions just to get under your skin with unknown point value, so you have no idea what you're shooting for.
Oh, I'm getting scored on it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Definitely, there's a score at the end. And there is. It's all unknown, so
okay.
You ready to go?
Sure thing.
Okay. Tell me one thing that you've learned recently that has inspired you.
Oh, boy. Well, I learned how to play the ukulele not too long ago, and that's kind of inspired me to kind of just play music out anywhere I'm at. I was out on a boat last weekend. I had a ukulele with me. I wouldn't have had a guitar.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Travel's easy.
Throw it in a backpack, and if you break it, no big deal.
Pick them up pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
What is the craziest dare that you've ever taken?
I don't know if this was a dare, but the first thing that just popped into my head was I did this bungee jump in New Zealand. Like I was there in college.
Okay.
Visiting some friends that were studying abroad, and it was like the second highest bungee in the world, and that was pretty crazy.
Yeah,
that was one of the more like adrenaline rush type things I've ever done. I guess it was kind of a dare.
Yeah, that's awesome.
yeah, it was cool.
Well, even just going to New Zealand, that's awesome in and of itself.
It was super, super lucky to have that opportunity. It helped that I had a few friends that were studying abroad there, so I could stay for free. You know?
Oh yeah, yeah, very cool. What sport did you try as a kid and fail at?
Oh, baseball. Yeah, I played baseball up until probably first or second grade or something like that. And okay. I just hated it. I was the guy that was sitting out in the outfield, like literally sitting, picking up like four leaf clovers or something. So that didn't work out.
I remember many, many years ago, I went to visit, one of my cousins that was playing soccer, and he was real young. I don't remember, 7, 8 or something like that, playing soccer. And it was just a bunch of kids running around chasing a ball in a big group. And he turns over to look at us and wave at us, and then stopped, and 10 other kids fall down behind him. It was hilarious. All right. If you could be one superhero, which one would it be?
One that could fly. So I guess Superman, maybe. That comes to mind. I've always thought it would be great. I've always been kind of obsessed with aviation in general.
Yeah.
But like, if I could have one superpower, it would be flying. So
that's
an easy one.
Easy. All right. Number five. If you could eliminate one thing from your daily routine, what would it be and why?
Ooh, eliminate one thing from my daily routine.
Yeah.
See, the problem is I don't really have a daily routine.
Oh,
no, it just feels like it's always something different. My fiance likes to get me up early to go walk the dogs. I would prefer to walk the dogs later in the day.
Yeah.
So not necessarily getting it out of the routine, but having it be a different part of my day. I'm usually a little cranky when I get up.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That could be an issue.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Five questions. You've answered them all. Congratulations. Your score is 713.
Okay. I'll take it.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll take it.
All right. So thank you again for being here today. I'm pretty excited about this conversation. It sounds like you guys have been doing some really exciting things. First out of the gate, I want to ask this question. This is the first time we've ever kind of sat down and chatted with each other, but do you consider yourself more of a business person or more of a musician?
Oh man, great, great question. I would say up until there was actually like a pretty clear line where I realized I was more of a business person than a musician.
Okay.
And that happened about 4 months ago, believe it or not.
Okay.
I had to make the difficult decision to quit this band that I was in.
All right.
Which was the third band that I was in. So I'm still in two bands and I still play plenty of music, but I realized that I had to kind of throw in the towel on this new band that I was really excited to be a part of, just because it just wouldn't, I had to focus on the business.
Yeah.
So I guess at this point, I would consider myself more of a businessman than a musician, which kind of sucks to say in a way. Like it's bittersweet in a way, I guess.
Is that something that you, as you were kind of, I would imagine, you know, going through a journey of learning instruments and just that being part of your whole life, did you ever foresee that as something that was going to happen? Or is it something that you've ever, that was a kind of a passion point for you? Or how has that journey been?
Yeah, so I think when I started the company with my co-founder, Dean, we both were musicians at heart.
Yeah.
And we started the company because of that. And we were like, I mean, for me personally, I was like, I don't want to get a real job. So let's see if I can do something in the music world. I was good at teaching. I liked doing it. So I think it started because of the passion for music.
Okay.
But like looking back in hindsight, like assuming things go well and you build a music lesson business, it becomes a business. And as the person who's in charge of the business, that's your primary role.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Coffee Break Podcast. If this information has been helpful to you, or you just really kind of like our theme song, can you help us out by rating us on whatever app you're using? And if you get really fancy, how about sharing a screenshot on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn? Okay, enough of all this. Let's get back to the conversation. So what did that transition look like for you? I guess let me pause on that question. Mm-hmm. I want to come back to it. What did that transition look like for you? And give a little bit of a broad overview of what is Bold Music?
So we're a music lesson provider. So one easy way to think about it is we're essentially brokers between music teachers and students.
Okay.
So we do a lot of marketing. We hire awesome music teachers and we find them private students. Historically, we were in-home only, so like our teachers would drive to people's houses.
Yep.
But as of March 15th, we now do virtual lessons as well, and we do some other things. But that's the very simple answer is we're a music lesson provider.
So historically, now when I was a kid, I went to a lady's house and she tried to teach me how to play the piano very unsuccessfully. I know where middle C is and that's about it.
Hey, that's something.
But that was the process. And thinking back on it, the way that we knew that particular person was through the contact of somebody else who was probably a contact.
Yes.
So, and that was just kind of a side gig that she did. So now that I'm kind of processing that as a music teacher, that's probably not always the easiest thing. Referral is probably the biggest component of trying to find students, right? So you're said you just classified yourself as a broker to connect those two people together.
Yep.
Is that a unique offering, or is that a business model that's been around for a while that a lot of people just haven't heard about?
You know, it's we were just talking about before this started about like the why.
Yeah.
I don't think the business model itself is unique at all. I mean, I guess you could say the in-home aspect of it is a little bit unique, but there's music studios and there's even other in-home music lesson companies that essentially are a business where teachers come work at and they don't have to worry about getting the students and they don't have to worry about things like billing and all that kind of stuff. So it's not,
so that maybe with a music store or something
exactly.
like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm,
gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And so that part of it's not unique. I think what is unique is how we go about doing it. So like our fundamental principles are very much centered around taking care of and providing really good high paying work for musicians.
Okay.
Consistent. So that's the kind of, if we were to jump into some kind of rabbit hole, that would be what I would say separates us from a lot of other music lesson businesses in general. We're very much instructor first because we think it's really important to support local musicians and enable them. Like they work with us and they teach music lessons and they make pretty good money with it. That allows them to also then pursue whatever else they're doing creatively.
That makes sense. So you're helping to kind of create a little bit of consistency for the actual student as well as the musician and just kind of bridging the gap, just creating a format or a forum for them to do that.
Absolutely. And if you're doing like what you were saying, your neighborhood person, you're fully reliant on referrals and things like that, it's very uncertain. You know, you'll have kids move out of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so the consistency of your pay and of your work is not super high. So what we do is we make sure, I mean, if things are a little crazy right now, obviously, yeah. but we do our best to make sure that there's a constant stream of new customers coming in
yep.
so that our teachers are basically working as much as they want all the time. And if they lose a student, well, by the time that student's finished their month or whatever, mm-hmm. we've already got another one lined up for them.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, going back to, I think I got off track, so I want to kind of go back.
Yeah,
to
yeah the, sure. The, that's probably my fault.
this is a typical nature. Going back to the kind of original understanding of how this entire thing kind of got started. What was the purpose of it? What was the reason you said, hey, this might be an interesting idea to kind of start?
Yep. So it was kind of rooted in really wanting to provide a good experience for musicians who also happen to teach. So that was front and center from the start. Dean, my business partner, both taught at a studio while we were in college and then for a couple of years after. And just noticed that there were so many things, and they weren't even, again, they weren't super unique or you know, crazy, but there was a few things that we were just like, you know, this really could be done better.
Yeah.
Why don't we go ahead and do it? But most of that was kind of under the umbrella of, wow, we're musicians and this kind of sucks. Like, we surely can make this a better experience for other musicians.
Gotcha. I don't mean this in a negative way at all, but this is typical of the nature, right? So one of the things about flipping over from a practitioner to a business person, and that's kind of what the way that I'm seeing this to be the case, right? So
oh, it's completely the case.
You were a practitioner, and then you're like, mm-hmm. okay, I've got to shift this. Is there an element that you think maybe a certain level of unknown when you're dealing with it's almost like a kind of a gig economy, right?
Yeah.
It's that same type of philosophy. And then just putting a whole business model around it that is less of, oh yeah, here's a guy to call. It's here's an organization to connect with. And maybe this instructor doesn't work out, so maybe I can connect with this instructor. Is that kind of the major component or one of the components of it?
It's one of them for sure. I mean, there's definitely a benefit to kind of being a part of a, you know, we call it the family.
Sure.
For the reason you just said, like when we sign up a new family, it's kind of like a matchmaking process where we're really trying to figure out, and it's very involved and hands-on and with conversations like who is going to be the right teacher for you. Well, even if that doesn't work out, we've got, you know, 25 other teachers that we could, you know, try. So there's that. And then just kind of being, as a musician, being associated with the family, you know, the Bold Music family is good because it's good networking and, and you meet other musicians that you might not have otherwise met. But you also aren't the bad guy. So it's kind of a weird thing to talk about. But like when you're... like you said, the gig economy, if it was just me kind of freelance teaching, going to people's houses, mm-hmm. I'm the guy that's responsible for teaching and making a good relationship with the family. But I'm also the guy that's got to be like, hey, mom, you haven't paid me yet.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, mom, you owe me this money. I really can't come back next week unless you pay me. So we take all that out. So working with us, the teachers are only responsible for the fun part, the part that they go over to the house, they teach, they have a good, you know, good impact on the family.
Yep.
And we're the ones that come in behind them and deal with the crap if there's an issue, you know? So that's a pretty big, I think, value add that we probably didn't even realize how big that was until we kind of got going and started really hiring some good teachers. Cause it's a big source. The ugly part of relationships can be a pretty big deterrent for music people.
Just a reminder, you're listening to the Coffee Break Podcast. Also, we wanted to let you know that our team puts together a weekly blog post. You can find it at locdoc.net/blog. It's guaranteed to raise your IQ by 12 points or your money back. So it's pretty much a win-win. All right, back to the conversation.
No, I think that there's a major value in that in any organization once you start to grow that and build that. And I would imagine that's been the case for you guys as it's been growing over the past couple of years, is being the practitioner, you are the person that does the work. You're also the person that collects the money. You're the person that handles the invoicing, the billing, and all of those things, the marketing.
Yeah.
And at some point, something is going to suffer because of it, right? And when you create a structure around it, it's very similar to kind of the way our organization works here is, you know, we do what we can to offload some of that admin type responsibilities from our technicians so that they can go out and do the work that they mm-hmm. enjoy doing, mm-hmm. and then we can allow other people to do the work that they enjoy doing.
Yeah.
So with that, the navigating that for that market, how do you see that transition happening on a regular basis for the musician? So let me rephrase the question. Are all musicians good teachers?
No, definitely not. Okay. And some of the best teachers aren't necessarily the best musicians. So okay. it's definitely that kind of goes, that question sort of points to our hiring process.
Hold on, let me back up on that real quick. Yeah. So not all musicians are great teachers, and not all great teachers are great musicians.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I would say. So like some of the most, I would say like some of our most, and this is not to disparage the teacher at all, but some of our best teachers aren't necessarily like the absolute top tier, guitarist, and really look no further than me. Like I'm a pretty good teacher. I've had great retention over the years mm-hmm. and students have liked me. Am I even like close to one of the best guitarists that work with my company? No,
yeah,
not even close. I'm not even like, I'm very average, I would say.
But I think that I think that's something that a lot of people may overlook. I think that's a very valuable point. Mm-hmm. Take the musician side out of it. I think you could take that into whatever industry that you're in. You don't always have to be the best at it to be the best teacher.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Or be the most effective employee or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally true. And when you're looking at our business, what's equally as important, it's so important to be like solid musically, because that's what you're teaching a kid or even an adult student to do.
Yeah.
Equally important, and in many cases more important, you've got to be a good communicator. You've got to be punctual. You've got to be able to get to a lesson on time. You've got to be responsible. You've got to be relatively clean cut. So there are all these other factors that if you stack them up, I mean, the music part is a big chunk, but it's probably not even the biggest chunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, you were getting ready to go down a path of the hiring process, and then I wanted to come back to this, and I'm going to make myself a note so I don't forget about it this time, but what makes a good teacher or a good trainer, regardless, I think, of what they're teaching? But the hiring process, how is that an important factor?
So people ask me about this all the time. So first of all, our hiring process is really, it's pretty in-depth, and we're having screening calls, multiple in-person interviews that involve talking and resume review, but also like play some music for me.
Yeah.
Reference checks, background checks. Because at the end of the day, our teachers prior to COVID were going to people's houses.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You've got to be, you've got to kind of check all the boxes when you're going to strangers' homes.
Sure.
That being said, there's not one resume. Like if I'm a mechanical engineer, mm-hmm. my resume will like check the box and like, okay, you're probably qualified. You got the degree from here. Your GPA was good. Okay, you're good. You're a mechanical engineer. I believe that you're probably good at being a mechanical engineer.
Sure.
Whereas for us, there's so many different paths that lead to you being a good musician and a good teacher.
Got it.
So we're looking at a lot of different things. Resume being one of them, but some of our best teachers have been teaching, like one guy comes to mind, Mars, who's been teaching since he graduated high school. He didn't go to college, but he's been a professional musician since age like 17.
Sure.
He's been on tour. He's played in bands. He's done the church stuff. Like he's one of our best teachers, even though his like path to becoming a professional musician is very different than, say another one of our teachers, Peyton, who's got a master's degree in classical guitar performance. They're both incredible teachers, but the journey that brought them to being an incredible teacher is not the same at all. But what is the same is all of the teachers that work with us are, again, relatively organized, good at communicating, trustworthy, dependable, punctual, things like that. And of course, very talented. But again, like it's not just one, we're not looking for one specific like type of musician to work with us. Yeah.
Do you do any personality assessments or anything like that through your hiring process? Or is it more skill-based and then based off of the characteristics that you're looking for that you kind of mentioned already?
Yeah, we don't do like a formal personality assessment or anything like that. But we've got, I'm talking to every candidate. Dean's talking to every candidate. Our program manager, Kara's talking to every candidate. And Kara's So Dean and I are, well, Dean's over 30 now, but, you know, we're both on the younger side. We're male. Kara's a little bit older, has had a career, has kids in high school.
Gotcha.
And so, like, between the three of us, we usually get a pretty good read of, like, who's...
Kind of get a good feeling if this person's going to work out or
not.
Oh,
yeah.
How has that journey been for you through the hiring process? Because that's, or the selection process, I guess. That's one of the more daunting tasks in business growth and business development.
Yeah.
What have you learned through the process?
It's always been, the hiring of good teachers has always been one of the biggest hurdles to the company's growth.
Mm-hmm.
More so than being able to find good students. I mean, for the most part, we've got the advertising mm-hmm. stuff down. Like, we know we can ramp this up or that up and find new students. Finding good teachers is definitely an art. We rely a lot on referrals from current teachers. And that's important because current teachers know and have been living in what we expect.
Sure.
And it's not, we're not drill sergeants by any means, but we have some things that are very important to us that I've already touched on that you can kind of in theory think, I wouldn't have a problem getting to, you know, five houses in one evening afternoon. But then when you really have to live it and you have to manage, you know, the communication with the family, mm-hmm. we tend to trust some of our best teachers when they say, hey, you should talk to this person. He'd be a good teacher.
Yeah.
That generally leads to pretty good outcomes. But it's an art finding good teachers. And again, like, there's not one, like, for example, we've posted, you know, on LinkedIn and Indeed to try and find teachers. We've never found a teacher that way.
Sure.
It's always through musicians maybe the booking agency with a band that I play in.
Got it.
They may hit me up and be like, hey, you know, I was just thinking about you. Like, you know, this guy in this band that we've got that works with us, he seems like he'd be a good teacher, or your name came up or something like that.
Gotcha.
But yeah, finding teachers has always been a challenge.
So let me go to those questions that I was bringing up earlier. What makes a good trainer or a good teacher? Because as you said, I mean, you could be an awesome musician or awesome at whatever craft it is that you're doing, but being able to explain how to get somebody else to do it is not the easiest thing. So what are those elements that you say, hey, based off of all our experience, this is what we have seen makes a good trainer or teacher?
It's hard. I mean, I would kind of flip that on its toes a little bit, and part of what is going to make a teacher effective mm-hmm. is making sure that we're pairing them with a student that we think will mesh with their skill set.
Gotcha.
But like some of the main, you know, high level things, you've got to be patient. If you're a really good musician and music has come easily to you,
mm-hmm.
You may not realize, for someone that it doesn't come easily to, how slowly you might need to take something and how much repetition you may need. So I think patience is a huge thing. And I don't even consider I'm not a patient. If you ask anyone I know, I'm not a patient person.
Yeah.
But I'm very patient in a teaching setting.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I actually don't know why that is.
Yeah.
But that's definitely something. And I think the most successful teachers, when they find a new student or when they get a new student, part of the initial journey is really kind of charting out a trajectory of like, what are we trying to accomplish here?
Sure.
Because not every student's the same. And so a good teacher, in my mind, can pull that out from a student and say, okay, I know where you want to be. I also know where I think you should be. And let's get you there in a fun, in a way that's going to be fun and enriching and minimize the frustration. It's always learning an instrument. I mean, it's the delayed gratification thing. Like it's never frustration and you know, pain is part of learning music. But we try to, if done the right way, you can minimize it.
So it's part of a big chunk of it is finding out the mutual objective. Like this is where we're trying to head. And so we know that's our objective. So we can work on that on the same process rather than, you know, being frustrated because we just don't know where we are.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What makes a good student?
Oh, that's another good question. It all depends, right? So adult students are fun to talk about. And we've got a lot of adult students because our service is pretty convenient. So like we could have a teacher come in here and teach you on your lunch break if you wanted. Whereas, you know, it works well for a lot of adults. When you're learning as an adult, it can be extra frustrating and annoying because you don't have the same you don't learn muscle memory as fast as you would when you're like 15.
Okay.
So it can be extra frustrating. You have to be a good adult student is somebody who knows that it's going to be difficult and knows that it's not going to happen overnight and takes things in stride and doesn't get too frustrated. For younger kids, it really depends on what the goal is. Like if there's a kid that wants to be a professional musician, mm-hmm. they've got to listen to the professional and kind of heed their advice and do the things that they say are going to get you to where you want to get you to the level you need to get to. But that's a small fraction of students. Most students are either doing it because their parents know the importance of it mm-hmm. or because they just like it.
Yeah.
So I think from a business perspective, a good student is one that you know, takes it seriously and at least practices some and is consistent.
Yeah. Somebody that's dedicated to practicing the craft is always going to be your best student because they're going to be the most engaged.
Exactly.
I guess.
Exactly.
Very interesting.
Yep.
So I do want to move a little bit to some of the unique differences that Bold Music brings to the table. So one of the things that I found very interesting because I did when I was younger, go to that lady's house and she tried to teach me how to play the piano, and then the dreaded recital, this piece of music that I had to try to memorize and then put on my suit and walk up there in front of everybody in silence and perform.
Yes. Terrifying. It's one of the most terrifying things you can do. If you're not practicing and you're not prepared, it's even worse.
But it is, it's one of those things. It's like being able to take the things that you've been practicing and then put it into application, I think, is very interesting. And you guys do that in a couple of different unique ways. What one of those things is the kind of gig.
The gig nights, gig night.
Tell us a little bit about why that became a thing and why that is kind of important to you.
Well, it became a thing for many of the reasons that you just said. We just didn't like the format of a recital.
No.
It seemed more kind of abstract too, sure. like just a thing that you do because you should do it. So we wanted to make the performance side of the experience with us something that felt relevant, and it felt like, oh, wait a minute, I actually am doing what professional musicians do.
Yeah.
Like I'm at a real venue playing in front of a real public live audience, mm-hmm. not just like parents and friends. And you can play with a band of instructors or your friends, and you can kind of do performances how you want to do them. But also, to me, performing, the actual performance, like getting up on stage and blowing everybody away, to me, like, actually doesn't matter. What matters is the process that leads you to getting up on the stage. You could do the process, you could practice, and you could get up on stage and have so much stage fright that you have never experienced and been prepared for in your life and completely bomb. And to me, it still was so worth it going through the process to get there. So we try not to put too much pressure on our kids. And a lot of our students don't have any interest in performing, and that's okay. One little other piece of that, one of the silver lining things about this whole quarantine is we've also started greatly expanding the types of collaboration and performance opportunities that we offer.
Okay.
And that goes into like the virtual space. So we've been doing these virtual collaborations where students will record parts of songs mm-hmm. at home, send them in, and we compile these really cool songs. Check them out if you haven't. They're cool.
Where you've got them on YouTube?
We've got them on our Facebook page.
Okay.
Actually, they are on YouTube as well, but the easiest place would be to find them on. And then we're calling them the Collaborations from Home. And we're also getting ready to do a virtual gig night that's essentially, you can think of it kind of like as an open mic, but rather than being at a venue, everyone's in their living room and we'll kind of go around and everyone will, and we're going to make it kind of into a good event. And the idea there is we're realizing that there's a lot of different ways that you can collaborate and perform showcase your stuff in a way that doesn't necessarily have to be at a venue in front of people. Cause there's a lot of people that will never do that, have no interest in doing that, but they would practice for a long time and perform a little something from their living room that other people can watch. And that can be really fulfilling.
Yeah. That's very interesting. So you're doing the gig nights, you've been doing the virtual stuff. Now, as far as the actual classes, you do at home kind of in person, mm-hmm. I guess you've got a couple of varieties of ways that people can do that.
Yep.
the virtual, obviously virtual education is a big thing right now. What are you guys seeing? And you may have been doing it before. I'm not sure what the process there mm-hmm. has been, but what are the elements that makes a virtual class or any class, I guess, for that matter, impactful?
Yeah. So from a virtual perspective, we actually started doing video makeup lessons in February.
Okay.
So we were actually completely lucky in that when things went on lockdown, we actually had the whole infrastructure in place to just fully go to virtual. It was just an email basically that went out.
Yep.
What makes a successful, so in-person instruction and virtual instruction are different.
Yeah.
Our argument is that one is not better than the other.
Sure.
So what we've actually realized throughout this whole quarantine is, and this is what's, I'm sure, is going to happen more and more over time, is most of our instruction is going to be a little bit of a blend of both.
Okay.
So video lessons, virtual lessons can be incredibly effective, especially like just as an example, like if you're a piano teacher mm-hmm. and you've got a nice little piano, you know, home studio, you've got all these bells and whistles that you can demonstrate and show things. And if you've got a really cool app, you can beam what you're playing to them sure. on the screen. So rather than them being at your house and you guys are sharing one piano and the teacher's like, hey, all right, let me play this thing for you. Okay, let me scoot over. You come and try and play it. Mm-hmm. It's more like, here's what you do. You see how these fingers I'm using, the camera, you know, and the student is like, oh, okay, I get it. And then there are some like technological advantages sure. to doing virtual instruction. And I would argue that it's no worse than in person. But what you don't get is, okay, I'm just learning how to play the guitar. You got to move your sure. finger a little bit. Let me literally grab your finger and move it. But there's really, really strong benefits to both. And so as our company is evolving, like most companies are, we're not going to go back to what we were doing before. It's not happening.
Yeah.
As we evolve, there's going to be more and more kind of a blending of sure. virtual and in-person instruction, because that's going to be the most effective.
Yeah. So maybe depending on whatever level that you're at, you can kind of jump in at different points.
Yeah. That's part of it. And another part of it is convenience. So it's way easier to schedule a virtual lesson, which will lead to more consistency.
Yeah.
So what we're going to see, I think, a lot of is people will predominantly do video lessons, mm-hmm. but maybe once a month or before a performance or just when they're getting started,
sure.
they'll do some in-person instruction to kind of augment the virtual side.
Gotcha. It's a good mix of both.
A mix.
Can you copy this key? That's a question we get asked about 3,422 times a year. And how can you actually be sure that the person who asked that question is supposed to get a copy of that key? Well, we think you should always know who can copy your keys to your business and your home, because it could be your neighbor, an old employee, a contractor, or even worse, your mother-in-law. At LockDock Security, we believe in protected key systems, so you always know who has a copy of your key. To find out more, visit LockDock.net or stop by our Charlotte location. LockDock Security, helping you protect your people and your property.
Yep.
I find the component of adding technology in there very interesting, because I definitely have seen that and been a part of that, right? Where you have somebody sitting there and you're both trying to share the same thing. But if you had the ability to have a camera, you know, just a GoPro or whatever, just kind of over top of whatever instrument or directly focused on it, that could be a major value add.
That's a major thing. And other things like screen sharing, mm-hmm. If I've got a pretty robust piece of software on my home studio, on my nice, fast computer, I can beam something over to them or even just like notate something really quickly,
sure.
screenshot it, or pull up some music online, you know, put it on a shared screen and shoot. And it's a lot quicker than, again, if I've traveled to your house, mm-hmm. I've probably got my guitar and my iPad. It's more limited than the whole host of things I might have at my house at my disposal. Especially if you're a professional musician, you've got all sorts of crap at your house that you might that you might be able to use for instruction. So, leveraging technology effectively can be really great. And that we took that incredibly seriously. Again, even prior to February when we launched video makeups. We were training our teachers back in October saying, these are features this is how you can use this technology effectively. And here's how you can consider teaching a virtual lesson mm-hmm. in a way, it be, differently than an in-home lesson because they are different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's something else that I'm interested in. So you also do some, according to your website, you do some studio
yes
work as well. So yeah, you do the gig stuff and then you bring them into the studio. The interesting component of that, and I don't want to keep going back to that lady that I went to her house and she tried to teach me how to play the piano, but if there would have been an element of the studio and even the gig part of it, I know where I am right now. That would have been so much more intriguing to
yeah
me.
Yeah.
It's almost like a practical application side of things. How in the world, like, how did that idea come to play to bring it into this? Because that's, it, to me, it does not seem like a natural fit or a natural yeah flow for a music lesson company yeah to then bring into that aspect.
That's a pretty unique thing that we do for sure. And those all started as camps. And so as we kind of transition again out of this pandemic and stuff, I think we'll have more opportunities, studio opportunities for okay just across the board.
Yep.
But right now, we do these camps that over the past 6 years are all, yeah, you're in a recording studio. And the reason for that is twofold. First of all, we just thought it was really cool. When I was growing up and when Dean was growing up, we kind of, as we were starting the company, we were like, you know, it'd be really cool if I was a kid to actually be able to go into a real recording studio mm-hmm and record. Like, so the cool factor, yep, but also there, when you say I'm a musician,
yeah,
you could be saying you're 20 different things. You could be playing a wedding band. You could be a producer. You could be a music director at a church. You could be a producer. You could be an engineer.
Yeah.
You could be a studio musician. So one of the things that these camps in the recording studio allow is they kind of give a student some added perspective about what all is out there mm-hmm if you decide to go down a musical path.
So another question that I'll ask, and part of this is going to be for personal inquest, but outside of music lessons, do you see Bold Music evolving into education for the studio components, maybe education on how to operate consoles or what EQing looks like, those mm-hmm types of things? Is that something that would kind of fall into the same business model, or is that just so far off track?
No, we actually do that. Oh. So I would say at least five, but probably more of our private teachers are professional producers.
Okay.
So, and they teach production lessons. So, it's mostly, and actually we have a couple of teachers that have podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
So they produce their own podcasts. But, I would say most of the ones that are producers, like produce music, but yeah, and talk about a good way to have a virtual lesson. It's way easier to learn production mm-hmm if you've got whatever program on your computer, but you're doing a virtual lesson with me and I've got this whole setup at my house that I can really show you
sure
different, you know, plugins and different ways of EQing, like you were saying,
yeah,
arranging and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm we actually do that.
Yeah. So you can approach it from a training side of things. And I know we're getting into the weeds on the very specific thing with the music industry,
yeah,
but I, from a broad standpoint within it, whatever industry you're in, approaching it from the technical side or the skill side of playing an instrument, also to how you make those instruments sound great, if it's live production yeah or if it's studio production, and then bringing it all into circle. Because maybe I'm a kid and I'm learning how to play the guitar and I'm like, you know what, I kind of like this, but I don't necessarily, I'm not that great at playing a guitar, but this whole studio world
yeah
is really appealing to me and it really clicks with me. And so it's exposing them to, so I guess my takeaway for that is if we were to apply that to our industry, it's giving exposure to different elements of the industry. And because somebody might not be as strong in the technical side mm-hmm of it or the skill side of it, but they may play into some other aspect a lot easier because they have interest in the industry overall.
What would you say is your industry?
In the security industry?
Yeah, so you would say the broad umbrella would be security.
Yeah, so yeah from the lock and security side, maybe I'm, from an installation standpoint, I can understand how locks work or how security mm-hmm systems work, but then at a point it's like, okay, I get it, but I'm not that comfortable
yeah
with
yeah
it.
Sure.
But I can explain people what it is. So maybe I'm better in sales, or maybe
right
maybe I kind of understand the philosophy, but maybe I'm really good with customer service side of things.
Yep.
So you can kind of play in different roles, but you're still within the same industry because you care about people's security.
Exactly. Okay. That makes a lot. I mean, there's complete overlap in the music. There are so many music related things that are that would fall within the music industry. I mean, yep. You could be a music, you know, licensing lawyer, you know, and if, and you could, and people get into that because they're really passionate about music, and then they're like, wait a minute, well, I also really am passionate about law.
You know?
So yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, man, I appreciate you being here today. I know I've taken a lot of your time, but it's been, I think, valuable from our aspect as well, just to kind of understand, you know, there's in any industry that you're in, whatever business you're in, there's training, there's mm-hmm. there's teaching, and there's students,
yep.
you know, regardless. And then there's so many different components. And so just understanding how people approach it and then the business models associated with it. So being flexible and adapting is part of it. When yep. yeah, we had Haley Bowen from Skill Pop on a couple
hey,
of weeks
Haley.
Ago, and she was talking about the fact, you know, they were doing in-person skill class, skill training, and then all of a sudden lockdown happened and you can't do that anymore.
Yeah,
you have to adapt. And so it's really cool to hear stories of people not getting bogged down in what you can't do and looking more for the opportunities of what you can do.
It's a mindset for sure. Yeah, I actually teach Skill Pop classes too. So
oh,
I teach a ukulele and a guitar class. So well, it's been kind of cool to switch over and do it virtually. It's a whole different thing, but it's great.
Hey, George, thank you very much for joining us today. We are so excited to have guests on this podcast every single week, and we are edging closer and closer to 100 episodes across both seasons, or I guess all three seasons that we've got of the Coffee Break podcast. If this is the first time that you've heard this or seen this, well, we'd invite you to go check out more episodes. We've got plenty of them for you, and we're getting closer and closer to episode 100 because we've been doing this for nearly 2 years. Man, it's very exciting. All you can do is you can visit our website and find out more. LockDoc.net/podcast. You can see all of the episodes there, and you can subscribe. Whatever platform you enjoy listening on, you can check them all out there. You can click a quick link, and it'll bring you right to the subscription page. If you're listening to this on iTunes, we ask you to give us a high ranking on the 5 stars to let people know about it. It'll help us get exposure to other people. And if you're listening to this on any social media platform, take a screenshot, hit the share button. We ask you to share that information with other people that might find this information valuable as well. This is available on video and audio. The video version is on YouTube and Facebook. You can find it all by searching for LOCDOC. All the videos will be there. Thank you for joining us today for this episode, and we'll see you next time on the Coffee Break Podcast.